This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
If you do not replace them, you create an operational gap in the areas of operation. The impact could be dire.
That was David Otto, head of security and defense analyst with the Geneva Center for Africa Security and Strategic Studies, on the situation in Niger. Details coming up. Also, China and Algeria plan to strengthen cooperation under Beijing's proposed Belt and Road Initiative. And 71 rangers who have died in Africa in the past year are being remembered on World Ranger Day. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. West African nations have given Niger 1 week to return to civilian rule following the recent coup and threatened measures, including the use of force, unless coup leaders return ousted President Mohamed Bazoum to power. As Mohamed Yusuf reports, the situation complicates the fight against terrorism in the Sahel region.
Confidence Makhari is a Nigeria-based geopolitical security analyst. He says that the region has lost a key ally who has been serious about the fight against terrorists and extreme groups.
The bulk of the officers who launched the coup are not people who are fighting on the ground. These guys who launched the coup are senior officers who are far removed away from actual fighting in Diffa and other parts of southern Niger. So, yes, on one hand, the region has lost an important ally in Bazoum in the fight against against armed groups. Personally, I do not think there isn't much that these new guys, the military, can do in that regard.
The coup leaders say they acted in response to what they termed Niger's worsening security situation and lack of action against jihadists. President Bazoum's overthrow has raised questions about the fight against Al-Qaeda and Islamic State in the Sahel region. Experts say the terror group are gaining ground in Burkina Faso, Chad, Mali and Niger. The foreign forces pulling out of these countries are leaving a security gap that terror groups exploit, says David Otto, head of security and defense analysis with the Geneva Center for Africa Security and Strategic Studies.
When you have forces that are engaged in counterinsurgency and you withdraw those forces, the expectation is that you have to replace them. If you do not replace them, you create an operational gap in the areas of operation. So it will mean that the forces that would be withdrawn will not be immediately replaced because, you know, what is happening, for example, in the case of Niger's Republic is that there will be consolidation of power by the military. They will not have time to redeploy their forces to areas where perhaps, you know, foreign troops are leaving. The impact could be dire.
In May, Martha Ama Akiapobi, a Ghanaian diplomat at the United Nations, said the security situation in Burkina Faso, Mali and Niger was deteriorating, and that armed groups were persistent in launching attacks against both civilians and the military. According to the Global Terrorism Index, a yearly study conducted by the Australia-based Institute for Economics and Peace, the Sahel region recorded 2,880 deaths out of a total of 6,701 global deaths from terrorism in 2022. Niger's military leadership has been threatened with sanctions, military invasion and suspension of government funding. Otto says sanctions and suspension of aid will empower insurgent groups to carry out more regional attacks.
Resources is quite key. So the junta now has to find alternative resources, you know, to be able to reallocate its strategy to deal with these jihadist groups. And it therefore takes time. So that also creates some level of vulnerability. So it is a win-win for the jihadists, you know, while, you know, this chaos takes place in the short and medium term. But in the long term, we're still left to see how these, you know, governments that are propping up through military groups will be able to deal with it in the battlefield.
The call for the military leadership to cede power and restore democracy has grown as Chad's President Idris Deby met with Bazoum during a visit to Niger. on Sunday and posted a picture of the ousted president online. It was the first image of Bazoum to go public since the coup last week. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
China and Algeria are set to strengthen cooperation under Beijing's proposed Belt and Road Initiative after Algerian President Abdelmadjid Tebboune's five-day state visit to China. The scope and depth of the investment worth $36 billion is expanding from traditional sectors such as basic infrastructure and energy to emerging areas like aerospace, telecommunications, and new energy. William Lawrence, professor of international relations at the American University in Washington, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy what that means for China's influence in North Africa.
Well, first of all, I can guarantee you China's not going to spend $36 billion in Algeria. This is a wish list. I think when Xi used the term sustained relationship, steady relationship, they're talking about long-term cooperation, not short-term new investments of any big significance. It doesn't really affect the regional relationship because those are bilateral relationships. So China's investing more in Egypt or in Morocco. That's a bilateral investment. And China, a lot of people don't know, had its largest foreign evacuation in its history when it pulled tens of thousands of Chinese out of Libya. And Western Libya is now the staunchest U.S. ally in North Africa. And Morocco and Egypt obviously are much closer to the U.S. than China and looking for more U.S. investment along with Chinese investment too, but not on the basis of close geostrategic ties. I think the biggest question is, since Algeria looms so large in the Tunisian economy and Tunisian politics, whether Algeria will try to open up the way for more Chinese investment in Tunisia. I don't think so. And right now, the Europeans led by the Italians and the Saudis are showing much more interest in Tunisia than the Chinese. But that remains to be seen, particularly if Tunisia continues to have trouble negotiating with the IMF, et cetera. So again, ironically, as Algeria improves its investment climate and becomes higher performing, that'll actually bring in more Chinese investment through the Chinese state banks and other private mechanisms. Whereas while Algeria remains closed and looking to China to invest, that will actually decrease Chinese investments over time. These government-to-government agreements are just wish lists. And certainly there'll be forward momentum, there'll be negotiations, there'll be further sub-agreements, and China will continue to try to sell a lot of products in North Africa and in Algeria. What Algeria will sell remains to be seen. They don't export much but oil and gas, but Algeria remains in a tough position because although it's relatively wealthy and it's selling a lot of oil and gas to Europe because of the Russia-Ukraine issue, it's not getting a lot of other outside investment and it's not making itself attractive to the Chinese or the European and other investors. And as long as banks worldwide, including Chinese banks, look for higher yields and less risk and don't see that much return on investment in Algeria, that's going to dampen the amount of money that actually gets invested.
Following the U.S.-Africa summit, what would China's influence in Africa mean for the U.S. policy in Africa?
Ultimately, things are going to go best if China and the U.S. aren't working at cross purposes in Africa, but in mutually beneficial ways. China already free rides on American security hegemony to a degree in Africa, where it just wants the Americans to secure more, you know, where China can invest. And China also benefits when the European and American and other relationships with Africa improve economic climates where the Chinese can make more money. So this idea in Washington and everywhere that because there's a huge geostrategic competition going on with China and Russia, therefore, you know, that applies to every arena where China and the U.S. operate. Whereas in the African case, everybody wins when they're not working at cross purposes. In addition, the Chinese reduction in investment in Africa creates an opportunity for the U.S. and Europe to invest more if they want to. Part of it is how the investment gets done. China likes big infrastructure projects. The U.S. and Europe have been moving away from that in recent decades towards more human resource development and private sector expansion, you know, that creates more wealth than the infrastructure projects alone. So a lot of people are concerned about China's doing in Africa. I'm less so. I think China's getting smart in Africa, and they're investing their money better. They're investing it where it performs better for themselves and for Africans. They're moving away from conflict areas and corrupt areas into more productive areas. And that ultimately is good for Africa, because you don't want the Chinese propping up the weaker governments and the lower performing areas. You want China to be investing where they get more bang for their yen, as does the African countries. So I just see China as less of a threat in competition with the US and Europe, and more of another investor that can help Africa. And if China's investing better, that's better for China and Africa.
That was William Lawrence, professor of international relations at the American University in Washington, speaking with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shenawi. 71 rangers who have died in Africa in the past year are being remembered on World Ranger Day today. 28 of them were killed by militia groups, poachers, or illegal loggers, according to the Game Rangers Association of Africa. Vicky Stark has more from Cape Town, South Africa.
The CEO of the Game Rangers Association of Africa, Andrew Campbell, says since records were first kept in 2012, 634 rangers have died in the line of service on the African continent. He says over half of those were homicides, with the Democratic Republic of Congo being the place most ranger homicides occur. There, they are mostly killed by militia groups which operate inside protected conservation areas.
They occupy space in those parks where they can be involved in many activities, either illegal mining, cattle grazing, extraction of minerals, illegal logging, poaching, and other activities. But they often are working and basing themselves inside of these parks because they're areas that are free of many human habitants.
Campbell says as the guardians of the planet's wildlife and wild places, rangers need support from communities to combat scourges like poaching.
We know that rhino growth rate for white rhino is in decline, which is a major concern. If we look at elephant growth rates, it varies very much. We know populations in southern Africa are growing well and doing well. But in some areas, you know, in West and Central Africa, forest elephants, we do have populations of those that are in decline. So it's very context and region specific when we look at it. But the ongoing bushmeat poaching, illegal timber harvesting, and illegal fishing is a massive concern. And I certainly don't think we've got on top of those issues.
He says World Ranger Day aims to raise awareness about the conservation and educational work rangers do. Campbell says support for their work is crucial if we are to meet the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals by 2030.
There's a big push this year to highlight the importance and the role of rangers as planetary health workers. They really look after the heart and lungs of our planet in these wild spaces that they work. They need better support. So if it's about creating a dialogue around the importance of rangers, we need a lot more rangers, and we need better equipped, supported, and well-led rangers out in the field.
Vicky Stark for VOA News, Cape Town, South Africa.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. As you know, this week we're celebrating the 60th anniversary of VOA's English to Africa service. Dozens of people have shared their thoughts about our programs, and here is one.
The program I stoutly love in the VOA programs to this date is the Black History Month of February each year. I will, however, suggest in the Africa Service Daybreak, A broadcast of Africa's tradition, culture, and beliefs. B, that there be a segment of Africa business ideas and significance to the Western world, especially agriculture. C, that folktales and stories of Africa be on broadcast through the VOA. Thank you, Omule O. Andrew Ibafo, Ogun State, Nigeria.
That was great. Thank you very much, Moe. And those are great suggestions. In Senegal, main opposition leader Ousmane Sonko has embarked on a hunger strike following his arrest last Friday. Local media say tensions are high after the police stopped his supporters from protesting in parts of the capital Dakar on Monday. For the latest developments, VOA's Peter Cloti reached reporter Alpha Diallo in the Senegalese capital, Dakar.
His lawyers, yesterday, they were on TV and said that Mr. Sonko will start a hunger strike today. You know, today he has been arraigned before a special court to answer for the 7 charges leveled against him.
Did the authorities say if they will grant him bail?
No, not at all. Because even when his lawyers came out yesterday and the day he was arrested on Friday and on Saturday, the prosecutor general held a press conference in which, you know, he just, I mean, mentioned the charges they are going to level against Mr. Ousmane Sonko. And even the prosecutor general went to say that if these charges are confirmed, then maybe Mr. Sonko will be remanded in prison. So there is no likely, even his lawyer say that the charges are so heavy, so they doubt whether Mr. Sonko can just, I mean, be given a bail.
Is that why he embarked on the hunger strike?
Yes, certainly that is the reason. And in fact, I mean, during the weekend, when his force audition, when he was forced arraigned at the special police section, the police intervention, that day he refused to answer even the question, so he didn't say anything according to his lawyers. And maybe this is the reason why he is observing hunger strike. But then in meantime, Dakar is on high alert. Security forces are seen everywhere. They are, you see them, you know, clad in their patterns, tear gas. So they are, well prepared for any eventuality, during Mr. Sonko's, questioning today and what is going to come out of that, you know, questioning with the special judge.
We heard reports that some of his supporters attempted to protest and that the police were trying to stop it. What is going on the ground at the moment about?
That's very correct, Douglas, because even this morning, so many people, it's the beginning of the week, so many people supposed to go to work, but because of the tension in the early hours of the morning, even the main highway, the tollway, where people were demonstrating, they held some demonstration in the early hours, preventing many motorists, from passing. And this, led to many people returning to go back to their houses. But as I was coming, because I'm still in the middle of, in the center of town, I have heard reports that the police have quelled all those demonstrations. So as we speak, there's high alert. People are all, some shops, many shops and even many business centers have not opened. And even some banks, some of those banks that are, in the outskirts of the capital, they all remain closed. So people knew that, or people are expecting that maybe whatever happened from the questioning of Mr. Sonko, there might be some troubles.
So tensions are still very high. What time are they going to question him?
Well, the questioning of Mr. Sonko, the auditioning started at 11. So, in Senegal's judicial system, this could, go up to, late into the night. So nobody can tell you exactly when they are going to finish the questioning, and it depends whether Mr. Sonko is also going to answer to the question, to the charges leveled against him, because the charges are so big, they are even talking of, calling for instructions and, organizing a group of, individuals to carry mayhem in the society, and they even mention of something like, association of, terrorist organization. So these charges are so closer. So we don't know actually what is going to happen at the end of the day.
That was Alpha Diallo in the Senegalese capital, Dakar. He was speaking to VOA's Peter Cloti. In Washington this week, fellows from the Young African Leaders Initiative are gathered for the Mandela Washington Summit to meet with each other and U.S. officials. VOA's Anthony Labruto is there today, and he spoke with some of the fellows about the program and what they hope to do when they return home.
Fellows at the Washington Mandela Summit in Washington, D.C., the future is limitless. As the 2023 Young African Leaders Initiative wraps up, many fellows look forward to going back to Africa and starting their good work. For Linda Mbayasi, educating agriculture workers through policy in her home country of Kenya will be the primary goal for when she gets home.
Yeah, I just plan to empower farmers with policy information because they are really excluded when it comes to policy, and just hoping to make it easier for them to digest and consume policy documents and information.
Bojozi Antoinette Nwebe, a fellow from Botswana, has gained many civic leadership skills that she can take back to her local communities.
So I had made a commitment to my country and my community to use agriculture as a science to develop communities, to empower women and girls, and to also use agriculture and leverage it to stand against sexual violence and gender-based violence. So now that the fellowship is over, I'm looking forward to being a servant leader in my community and continuing the work that I was doing by building community gardens as safe spaces for women and girls and take a stand against sexual violence and gender-based violence in my community.
For Christine Lopez Miguel, an Angolan YALI fellow, educating the next generation is her top priority.
I plan to continue working in education. I stand for education. I work for young people because I do really believe if we start to empower young people, showing them that vocational education is very important to empower them, to make sure that they are strong enough to continue and pursue their dreams, they will achieve their goals and they will help Africa to be brave.
At the Washington Mandela Summit in Washington, D.C., I'm Anthony Labruto for VOA News.
A cybersecurity company says six African countries, including war-torn Sudan, enforced internet limits within their territory during the first half of 2023. Netherlands-based Surfshark says that's twice as many nations as during the same month in 2022. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
In the first half of 2023, the cybersecurity organization Surfshark recorded 42 new internet disruptions worldwide, nine of which occurred in Africa. Six countries, Ethiopia, Guinea, Mauritania, Senegal, Sudan, and Tanzania, account for nine internet shutdowns. Egna Grises is a representative of Surfshark.
We can see that this is twice as many countries as we had in the first half of 2022, unfortunately, because in 2022 there were three countries in Africa that imposed new restrictions. This year we have six. So yeah, we have the recorded nine restrictions, and each of the six countries either had one or two different restrictions.
Ethiopia, which has imposed internet shutdowns because of ethnic unrest in the country, recently lifted its restrictions. Restrictions remain in place in Sudan and are made worse by damage from the ongoing war, which has damaged infrastructure and cut off electricity in many areas. Tariq Ahmed left Sudan 3 weeks ago and expressed the challenges he faced in communicating with his humanitarian colleagues in the western part of the country.
I was trying to talk with my colleagues and staff in South Darfur and West Darfur states, and I couldn't reach them, and either by call or internet or WhatsApp messages. So to know how they are and how their families are doing during this difficult time, and also see the possibility of evacuating them to a safe place. So I just couldn't reach them until one of them managed to cross the border into Chad, and then he called me by a Chadian number on WhatsApp to tell me how it is, and they have reached there safely.
Grises says authorities in Africa usually shut down the internet in response to protests, conflict and political crisis. Grises notes the restriction not only prevent people from protesting, but also stop them from spreading word of any protests to the rest of the world. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Nicole Peters, and our engineer, David Greenberg,